This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is time for our first story of the hour. Last Saturday marked UMNO's first annual General Assembly as the opposition. And this time around, it seems that it was a much quieter affair as compared to previous years. The reaction didn't seem to be as strong, I suppose, just in terms of the crowd. I think there was a huge difference there. We did have Keith Kam from BFM News at the General Assembly. He was at PWTC and he's going to be joining us in a little bit to tell us how it went. Keith, hi. How did it go?
Well, you're talking about the UMNO General Assembly, right?
So
that's right.
Well, we've been covering it for the last 3 or 4 years, and there was a marked difference, actually, because with the previous assemblies, even before going for the assembly itself, most media practitioners would have to register with the UMNO, the UMNO media people.
That's right. And I think it's important to note that is not an easy process.
It is not an easy process. Well, first of all, getting a parking around that area is a nightmare.
Logistics.
Also, if you are not media, they consider friendly.
Right. And you need those media passes in order to gain access to the halls where the debates and the speeches are going on. And they used to have these very high-tech scanners that would scan the barcode on your media pass before they even let you in. However, the coverage that we ended up doing was more in the public areas where we try to doorstop ministers,
right,
or UMNO leaders at that time. So because those areas were open to all of us.
And how would you say, I mean, a lot of reports are coming out about the mood, I suppose, trying to gauge where it was at. How would you say that was?
Well, I think one thing that we should all take note of is the fact that, with all these events, it's held at the Putra World Trade Center, which is also profit-generating entity.
That's right.
So in order to generate profits, what they do is they take advantage of events like these, just like what they do with Mata and all the other fairs that they have there. They rent out booths for just a little bit of income. So this time around, what I did notice was they did rent out all these booths, but this time around, these booths were all populated by small mom-and-pop businesses, people selling tudongs, people selling t-shirts, even pomegranates as well.
Right.
Yeah, it was actually quite cheap. I bought some.
But
that's besides the point.
What was it like in the past?
What it was like in the past was that those booths were there, but there was a lot more activity. The booths were mainly populated by government agencies, sometimes ministries.
Right.
Most notably, the one I remembered most vividly was when they launched PRIMA, Perumahan Rakyat Satu Malaysia, because Prime Minister at that time, Dato' Sri Najib Razak, he officiated it at one of the booths itself. So there was so much activity, there was karaoke singing going on. What was interesting was that these booths need to be paid their rental.
Correct.
So ministries pay for these rentals, and you know, ministries get the money from taxpayers like you and me. So it eventually goes back into PWTC. This time around, there were no ministries to help out PWTC. It was, you know, genuine businesses.
Hence baju kurungs next to pomegranates.
Right.
Yeah, which is, I guess, descriptive of how, you know, a real market style thing would
feel like.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Keith, what about the political mood? I mean, I guess this is, of course, their first General Assembly as the opposition. There's still a tremendous amount of soul searching that they're doing. They haven't really come to any kind of consensus on what kind of party they want to be. What was the mood among the UMNO, I guess,
Members,
yeah.
Well, what is really noticeable is the fact that there are, I mean, there's so much more, there's so much fewer members present.
Right.
and most of them were, well, they were listening to the speeches, but I noticed that not all of them were listening as intently as, you know, they weren't as, the word that you would use is really semangat. It wasn't, that just wasn't there anymore. They were, well, fair enough. They were actually looking for a way to revive their party, which had suffered a pretty bad defeat.
They still had the same photo, though. of this time Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi sitting in the center and everyone pointing their fingers at him, which is a recreation, I suppose, of the photo from last year,
yeah,
in which it was Dato' Sri Najib and everyone kind of looking at him and pointing their fingers.
Yeah, but I mean, when you think about it, they've got a lot of they've lost quite a lot of funding.
Yeah.
So you know, some of the questions they did have a press conference after the assembly was after the assembly wrapped up, and you know, when you think about it, a lot of they did rely on a lot of funding. I mean, if you drive down the Jalan Mahameru and Jalan Tun Razak right now, you don't see that huge LED lights anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
So, you don't see that, but also before every UMNO AGM, there would be banners or yeah. digital posters on each of those screens all across near Parliament, everywhere, right?
Right.
And all of that's not there
so
anymore.
So that's not there anymore. So we did ask Dato' Sri Ahmad Zahid, you know, what they are doing with the fact that they are a little bit short on funding right now. His answer to us was, we practice something called low-cost, high-impact.
Terima kasih kerana masih mempunyai keberanian datang ke Perhimpunan Agong, sebuah parti pembangkang. Walaupun dispekulasikan apabila UMNO menjadi pembangkang, Dewan hanya akan berada sekitar 25%. Saudara-saudari sendiri melihat Dewan itu tidak kurang orang pun. Dalam keadaan ini, UMNO berazam. Keyakinan kita terus memperkukuh dan memperkasakan perpaduan di kalangan ahli-ahli menjadi keutamaan kepada kami semua.
So he was calling on unity or yeah. everyone to get together.
Well, we did ask him, you know, what's the way forward for UMNO? He basically just told everyone that the consensus was that UMNO needs to consolidate, but he wasn't too much on specifics after that.
So Keith, there's another clip that we have, and this one is from UMNO Vice President Ismail Sabri Yaakob, who was urging KJ to return to the fold and be a team player. I just want to get your comments on that, but let's listen to the clip first.
Saya rasa dia sebagai bekas ketua pemuda, bekas dia pun pemimpin yang lama dalam UMNO, dia patut tahu apa risiko. Dia patut tahu apa yang patut dibuat dan sebagainya. Soal parti, kita tidak menentukan apa keputusan yang nak dibuat terhadap beliau. Cuma saya harap beliau kembalilah menjadi ahli pasukan UMNO. Keputusan ramai mesti dihormati, melebihi daripada keputusan peribadi.
So Keith, I mean, you know, KJ has been kind of living large a little bit since, you know, over the last few weeks, because, you know, they had a shadow cabinet and the only thing anyone was talking about was KJ as finance minister. And then, of course, even at the UMNO General Assembly, because, you know, even on his breakfast grill here, Khairul Jamaluddin wasn't shy about criticizing Ahmad Zahid Hamidi and saying UMNO is rudderless and without a leader. I mean, was that a prominent feature in your conversations?
It wasn't so much, it wasn't as prominent as the fact that there were a lot of reports of UMNO members deserting the party, and Dato' Sri Ahmad Zahid was talking about repercussions and what he planned to do with these deserters. But at the end of it all, during last night's press conference, he kind of struck a conciliatory note about it.
Oh, good.
And it seemed like he was a bit more open. He welcomed all sorts of criticisms. And, you know, if he basically called on all these UMNO members who were unhappy with what was happening to come and talk to him, saying his door is always open.
All right. Well, Keith, thank you very much for that update from the ground on the UMNO General Assembly. Yeah, Lynn, I mean, it's interesting. I guess that's the only approach that one can take, right? In the sense that you can't be a hardliner when you've been defeated and you're out of power. You have to be like, I take all criticism. Come, talk to me.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's not as if there's a lot of room to be like, nope, door is closed. Never mind.
So long.
Okay, moving on to our next story. She was once hailed as a bastion of democracy, but Myanmar's leader Aung San Suu Kyi has seen a swift fall from grace. I think we've all seen it. She's been condemned and lambasted by the international community for her failure to speak out against the violence and mass killings of Muslim Rohingya in Myanmar's northern Rakhine state.
It's not ethnic cleansing. Muslims have been targeted, but also Buddhists have been subjected to violence. But there's fear on both sides, and this is what is leading to all these troubles. And we would like the world to understand that the reaction of the Buddhists is also based on fear.
Because prejudice is not removed easily, and hatred is not going to be removed easily, but we can work at it together. And I'm confident that the great majority of the people of this country want peace.
Since the operation began in Rakhine a year ago, tens of thousands of Rohingya Muslims have died and 700,000 have fled. Most are living in refugee camps in neighbouring Bangladesh. UN's human rights chief told the BBC Aung San Suu Kyi's attempts to excuse the crisis were deeply regrettable, saying that she could have stayed silent or even better, could have resigned.
Aung San Suu Kyi has since been stripped of, you know, several human rights awards. Many have called for her Nobel Peace Prize to be revoked, but right. that hasn't yet happened. Meanwhile, on our home front, Tun Mahathir has declared that Malaysia will not be supporting Aung San Suu Kyi as a leader over her handling of this crisis. He's currently in New York. He addressed the UN General Assembly last Friday on the state of the Rohingya people in Myanmar. And during an interview with a Turkish news channel, Tun Mahathir spoke about how he has lost faith.
I have myself written to her. She has not replied. I am very disappointed because during the time when she was detained, we had struggled and tried to get her released. Of course, eventually, she was released. But over this issue, she seems to be a changed person. She did not want to say anything against the action taken by the military on this Rohingya. So we make it quite clear that we don't really support her anymore. We have complained about the treatment of the Rohingyas to the world, and in fact we have ourselves received quite a lot of Rohingya people in our country.
That was Tun Dr. Mahathir in an interview with the Turkish news channel. He also criticised the authorities in Myanmar and Aung San Suu Kyi for denying that the Rohingya people were being murdered and their homes torched, forcing over a million refugees to flee. Tun also questioned the world for keeping mum on the massacres that were being carried out.
Strong messages.
A very strong message. And I think, it's a really sad turn of events, isn't it? I mean, I think... given how much the world, Malaysia included, supported Aung San Suu Kyi, fought for her release, I think there was a burden of expectation on her to stand up for the same sort of rights abuses that she was being subjected to.
Well, I mean, she was...
And even worse, right? Because she... You know, this is people being massacred. It's essentially genocide, though no one's calling it.
Exactly. I mean, she was a huge symbol, right? For freedom, for... I guess standing up against what was wrong.
Rock stars wrote songs about her, damn it.
Exactly. And yet here we are. And I have to say that I'm proud of us, and I'm proud of Tun Dr. Mahathir for kind of taking so strong a stance, because while it's been trickling in all over the world, I don't think many people really want to kind of come out and say, look, this
also,
is where we are.
Doubly hard for us, right? Because of ASEAN.
Yes,
there's that whole non-interference policy.
That too.
And so all we usually do is stand back and go, well, this is an internal matter and we are not going to interfere. They should resolve it, but we're not happy about it. That's the most we've ever said. And so these are really strong words, and I'm sure all the ASEAN-like secretariat people are running haywire now trying to figure out what to do next.
Well, anyway, I'm glad that we've taken a stand, for what it's worth.
Yes.
Moving on to our next story is about an upcoming film that has stirred up controversy in its pre-production, pre-casting, pre-everything stage.
I'm from the New China News Agency.
Looking for a news story?
You could have taken care of him.
Let the mayhem begin.
Remember when she was just our Bond girl?
Don't get any ideas, Mr. Bond. Well, so we received big news last week when it was announced that Tom Wright and Bradley Hope's Billion Dollar Whale would be made into a movie, with the rights being given to Ivanhoe Pictures of SK Global. But that big news was kind of overshadowed by the announcement that Tan Sri Michelle Yeoh is the co-producer of that film, which drew plenty of criticism.
Now, you may remember Michelle being very much in support of Barisan Nasional. Here she is speaking about then Prime Minister Najib Razak back in 2013.
A leader whose love and commitment for our country has no limit. A leader who embraces our differences with great respect and who will ensure wise changes to make our country and our people even stronger. a leader who is our Prime Minister and who, I hope from the bottom of my heart, will remain so.
That did not age well.
No, and that did not happen either, no matter what she wanted from the bottom of her heart, I guess.
So, this was back in 2013, before yes. GE13, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the news of her being a co-producer of the movie comes just a week after she posted a selfie with the book. And that internet posting actually got a whole bunch of pushback as well, right? This happened on September 21st, and her caption read, "I'm loving this brilliantly reported new book by journalists Bradley Hope and Thomas Wright."
That's nice and even, I suppose. That's very even-toned.
Is, but I suppose there seems to be a mistake with regards to her communication on this issue. Maybe she forgot what she said in 2013. Maybe she was a Manchurian candidate. Maybe she was a robot drugged up and reading from a script.
I see. Yeah,
I'm just saying.
That's where you're going with this.
I don't know.
One movie isn't enough for you. You have to try and make a whole other one. Anyway, criticism has come hard and fast from many quarters. The Center to Combat Corruption and Cronyism executive director Cynthia Gabriel was among the first to say so, tweeting, "Cheap opportunists like this should have no place in new Malaysia. Mana ada integrity. Before regime change, she was all over Najib and co."
Right. Some of the rest kicked off with puns. Lumba Pantai MP Fami Fazil in a series of tweets kicked it off with, "You've got to be kidding."
She's got a great surname for this.
Yes, she does. Hannah Yeo, of course, our Deputy Women, Family and Community Development Minister, said, "Not you, all Yeos are created equal." Ha ha ha.
Jabba Sadiq, of, you know, friend of the show, wrote, "How low can Yeo go?" in commenting on a tweet by another Twitter user who described Michelle Yeoh co-producing the film as the very definition of irony.
That's right. Michelle Yeoh, of course, is the daughter of former Perak MCA chairman, the late Dato' Yeoh Kian Teck. Last January, the Goodwill Ambassador for the United Nations Development Programme, the UNDP, and the star of the 2011 Aung San Suu Kyi biopic, again praised Najib, this time for his handling of the Rohingya refugee crisis.
So this, I suppose, I mean, this is coming pretty soon after Kanye West on SNL has been making headlines for different reasons. But my point is, how much should we or do we expect from our entertainers in terms of political engagement, right? Like, do we judge them on that basis? Do we need to kind of... Because there's a lot of tearing down that's happening of Michelle Yeoh right now.
Yes.
And I think it's understandable. There was a lot of anger. And,
correct.
There is a unique tone deafness to saying, "He loves us. I hope he remains Prime Minister forever."
Correct.
Followed by, "This is a brilliantly reported book."
Well, so, I mean therein lies the problem, right? And that's why I said there was a communication issue as well. I think if she had played her cards better, if she had gone something along the lines of, "Oh my God, the revelations in this book,
I had no idea.
Yeah. Not that I'm saying that would have worked. Most people would be like, "Oh, don't be so naive." But I think it's better than just pretending like it didn't happen. Yes, we do rely on our celebrities, not just as the public, politicians as well. They use that reach to get their message out, right? In America, celebrities get together for that Rock the Vote program where musicians, actors all come together to engage the youth. It's the oldest trick in the book. It's endorsement. It's sheer endorsement, only it's not a product, or where it is a product, but the product of the politician. And Malay celebrities do it as well. The only thing, and Lynn, this became very apparent, there were a whole bunch of them who were paid a lot of money at the last election to make those videos in support of Barisan Nasional. And they weren't necessarily blatant or obvious in those videos. They tried the Malaysia crew and Malaysia coup, and they tried to hide it behind this balanced look at what's good for the economy, but we all knew who it was funded by. And then after that, the day after May 9th, all of them started posting selfies with Dr. Mahathir.
Yes.
And it is just... And they go back to that same argument, right, which I don't believe to be true, that argument of, oh, you know, Periuk Nasi, it's my rice bowl, so I need to support corruption and criminal behavior because I don't want my rice bowl to be affected.
Well, I think there is also a very real sense that it's not necessarily about how I am actually politically engaged. As you say, it's about which side my bread is buttered on. But it's also, well, whatever, I'll just say these things. I don't know if there is a real understanding of the impact of what is being said. I mean, you're using words like endorsement, and I agree. Mm. But I don't know that... the people making the endorsements necessarily think of them as endorsements, as opposed to, well, it's just a tweet. it's just a post, it's just this, it's just that. So I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean,
and I don't know also how much or how little we should be expecting.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we want your opinion on this as well. How seriously do you take a celebrity endorsement? Do you still take it seriously? If someone you follow, if someone you're a fan of comes out and says, well, you know, this is the political party I support, you go, well, maybe I should take another look at that political party. I mean, that would be an interesting look, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it'll be a fun thing for you to consider. 7733-2900 is the number to call. And let us know what you think. Are you offended, deeply offended, that Michelle Yeoh will be producing this movie? Do you take these things seriously, or is it just another celebrity tweet endorsement / jibber jabber?
Basically, yeah. Does it matter to you? We've got a call from someone who would prefer, I suppose, to go by Dr. M. Hello, good evening.
Hi, good evening. I was driving and I just heard this and I thought I'd chime in. I don't want to give too much of myself away.
Please. Sure, please do.
I like your program. I like the hot buttons that you cover. I'm a Malaysian American.
Right.
I went through the social media and actually commented, and then I deleted my comments because I thought, you know, let's take the high road and it's entertainment and she's the lady here that we're talking about, you know, has a right to navigate through show business and so on. Plus, she's got the credentials. However, there were some inappropriate analogies with Tony Fernandez prior to this. And quickly, I thought it was a false analogy because Tony came out and apologized and he actually said sorry and huge regret and shame. And he also let us know that he was under pressure and they are a heavily regulated industry. And we had the Rafida incident, which kind of exacerbated it. In this case with Michelle Yeoh, there was no such thing. There was no remorse, not even a hint of remorse. It seemed very cut and dry, just smoothly, very slickly moving from one project to another. It seemed very opportunist. And I think that is why the Malaysians didn't react well. Because if she had explained and then at the same time asserted her right as an artist and as a show business person to be able to leverage whatever is a hot button, that would have been fine. But she didn't do that. And it was just too smooth and slick with no remorse.
Yeah.
And, you know, and being in social media, this is what you get. You know, you have to go the full nine yards. It's part of the territory. That's all I wanted to say. Yeah.
Well, hey, thank you so very much for your call. And you're absolutely right. I think the remorse and the video that Tony Fernandez put up probably went a long way to accelerate forgiveness. I don't think everyone's forgiven him as
but
yet.
But it helped.
But it helped.
Yes. Let us know what you think. Do you mind? Do you care if our entertainers are involved in politics, if they make political statements? Is it a thing that we need to be concerned about? 7733-2900 is the number to call. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back after the news.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.